Steve Quirk. Live on DAB Digital Radio, Colorful.com, and apps. This is Colorful Radio.
Junior doctors have gone back to work after 6 days of industrial action. Members of the British Medical Association are calling for a significant pay rise for medics following years of real-term pay cuts. The Post Office ministers told MPs that ways to overturn the wrongful convictions of sub-postmasters were being investigated. Kevin Hollinrake says many people have already been compensated.
My main concern now is for those still waiting for full and final compensation and the slow pace at which criminal convictions related to Horizon are being overturned by the courts. This is not just a matter of getting justice for those wrongly convicted. Overturning their convictions is also key to unlocking compensation.
And the number of pothole-related claims jumped by 40% annually last year, according to Admiral. It recorded more than 1,300 claims across 2023, up by around 40%, compared with the almost 950 claims in 2022. That's the latest from Radio News Hub. I'm Peggy Walker.
Tonight's EuroMillions jackpot is £46 million.
Oh, that calls for a dance, Dermot. Do you know the robot?
I'm a little rusty.
You've still got it.
Never lost it.
You're a machine.
Get that EuroMillions feeling tonight. EuroMillions from the National Lottery. Play on app. Estimated jackpot. Account terms, rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
Coming up, Africa in Focus.
Hello, I'm Dr. Shaun Bakare. If something in your body doesn't feel right, talk to us. Don't let the worry of cancer play on your mind. Tests could put your mind at rest. Until you find out, you can't rule it out. Your NHS wants to see you. Contact your GP practice.
Live on DAB Digital Radio, Colorful.com, and apps. This is Colorful Radio. Africa in Focus.
It's your boy Easy. UG Official. Music so sensual. Shocky, shocky, me say, baby dancing for me and up. Shocky, shocky, me say, baby dancing for me and up. Shocky, shocky, me say, baby dancing for me and up. Shocky, shocky, me say, baby dancing for me and up.
Say, one in a million. Nobody give me wine like it. Tell me I be one in a billion. Where everybody then they call me cheap. I know they carry posts like a bullion. Where if you give me dance, you go chop deep, babe. Baby girl like a billions. Where you give me chance, make you chop deep.
I she do the yak. She said the yoke up on fire. Where body big like Bombardia. Her body big like Bombardia. She say she no want no wahala. She no want no wahala. Cause she need a real man like Montana.
Oh yeah, shut up, she go give me kind of dance. Where me I never see.
Shocky, shocky, me say, baby dancing for me and up. Shocky, shocky, me say, baby dancing for me and up. Shocky, shocky, me say, baby dancing for me and up. Shocky, shocky, me say, baby dancing for me and up. Shocky, shocky, me say, baby dancing for me and up. Shocky, shocky, me say, baby dancing for me and up. Shocky, shocky, me say, baby dancing for me and up. Shocky, shocky, me say, baby dancing for me and up.
She be tryna hold my hand, though. Shorty said she wanna do the tango. I did tell her she be fine all the time when she dance. Say you're sweet to say mango. So wind up your waist for me, baby. You're out, that it drive me crazy. The way you kill her dance, them I rate it. Me love your style and nobody can debate it. So let me see you shocky, shocky. Oh girl, make you take it low. Girl, move your body, body, no rush, baby, take it slow. I swear you know, anywhere you they be, I'll go. Who there for phone, not for me. Where there for check me, cause tonight it go be my go, it go be my go. Shocky, shocky, me say, baby, dancing for me and up. Shocky, shocky, me say, baby, dancing for me and up. Shocky, shocky, me say, baby, dancing for me and up. Shocky, shocky, me say, baby, dancing for me and up. Shocky, shocky, me say, baby, dancing for me and up. Shocky, shocky, me say, baby, dancing for me and up.
shocky, me say up, up. Baby, dance it for me and up. Shocky, shocky, me say up, up. Baby, dance it for me and up.
Good morning, or good afternoon, or even good evening, and welcome to Africa in Focus. I'm your host, Julius Baluto. We're coming to you from the heart of London to wherever you are on Colorful Radio. And today I'm joined by Priscilla Nwepo. So Priscilla, welcome to the show and Happy New Year.
Wow, Julius, thank you so much. It's such a pleasure to be here. And let me say Happy New Year to your audience, and good morning, good afternoon, evening, wherever and whatever time you're tuning in. I hope that it's nice to be back, and it's nice to be back so early in the new year. So I hope you all enjoy the conversation today.
Yeah, it's really, I'm happy to be back again, you know, in a different new dispensation. Let's see what's new year 2024 will bring our way. We hope for the best. We are not going to be speculating. We just hope for the best. And nothing but the best. That's what we hope for now, for 2024. But to kick us out, yeah, our Africa. Did you know that Africa is still there? You know, Africa never goes anywhere. It's still there. It's still there.
And so, it's still the number one favorite subject of conversation for many.
Yep, it's still there. Don't forget.
Trade, when it comes to immigration, when it comes to...
Yeah.
That word
is everywhere.
And immigration.
It's magical. It's everywhere, you know, and everywhere.
You mean the word Africa?
Africa, that word, Africa, is everywhere.
Yeah.
And that's why
it's
we have
magic
to
word at the
focus
moment,
a little
actually.
Bit. And in this wonderful new year, we kick us off by focusing on our leaders in Africa. You know, when you listen to African leaders speak, they make wonderful speeches, you know, so inspirational. You're like, man, that's it, that's it, that's it. This one got it right. And you want to stand up, clap for them. And you're like, I hope now they listen to what they said. And I hope it means something to them personally. And I hope it will be part of their conviction. And I hope from their speeches, they will implement what they are talking about. And the key question we have today, do African leaders ever mean what they say? And, you know, to start us up, I want to illustrate what I'm talking. And we'll kick off with a wonderful leader, you know, new kid in the block, you know. He's spoken wonderful things to this wonderful continent of Africa, but we want to see, does he also mean what he says? And not him alone. Our key issue today, do African leaders ever mean what they say? So that will be our conversation. Join us wherever you are. Listen, send us your, you know, thoughts. And you never know, one day we will play them live on air. But the key thing, let's just listen up a bit, and then we know what you are going to talk about. You know, you know how we are going to, this will pan out.
Kenya is going to be a country run on the basis of the rule of law and the constitution, and all citizens have an equal opportunity, and no citizen is greater than the other. As president, I am going to make sure that we avoid and we banish impunity. There is nobody who is going to threaten Kenya with impunity. Everybody must respect the law, and this country is going to be governed by the rule of law, and we will make sure that everybody obeys the Constitution and is and works and respects the rule of law. I want to tell our friends who are used to impunity, who are used to forcing their way, that they will have no way, because this is going to be a country based on the rule of law, and nobody, let me repeat, nobody, let me say it again, nobody is going to threaten Kenyans. No.
That was President William Ruto when he got elected when he came, you know, he was the first days when he came, became the president. And you can see the passion, you can see what's happening, and really committed. And Priscilla, just a quick one. You know, how would Kenya be like if that was just to be the case? How? What a wonderful place it would be. I mean, that's my feeling, but what's your take on that?
Well, I mean, that speech initially sounded so wonderful because, you know, he wasn't just... let me rewind a couple of steps. So let me go back to that question you asked about African leaders, if they're ever truthful. And I just want to say that in response to that are there any leaders that we can say are truly truthful and honest? Because they all tend to, whether they're Africans or European or Americans or, you know, Asians, whatever, you will find that there is this whole, that adage that says, as the adage that in relation to our parents, I would say, do as I say, not as I do. So, you know, they make these speeches, which is about what they say on the outside, but they do something completely different. Now, back to Ruto. Now, Ruto, when he made that speech, obviously that was after, of course, the Supreme Court granting him victory at the polls, and it sounded fantastic, and it was great because it was applauded by everybody. The world at large applauded this situation. Why? Because, you know, we thought the whole matter had gone to court, and the Kenyan judiciary had, you know, responded within days on this matter, and had responded and granted him victory. And so when he came out with that speech, it was a very hard-hitting speech. It was all about the people. It was all about him leading and being that servant leader. And of course, he's young, and, you know, wow, what an explosion it was. And then you fast forward to today, and you're thinking,
yeah, which is what we want to do now. Having said that, let's talk about now today. Let's go back to Ruto today, 2024, 2023, 2024. Less just slightly more than 1 year in power. Yeah, so let's hear. What his thoughts are. Let's share another.
We're gonna hear that, are we?
Yeah, yeah. I'm gonna listen to him.
Having launched a tirade against his perceived opponents a few hours to the new year on Sunday, President William Ruto today picked up from where he left, saying his government will not allow beneficiaries of corruption to stop projects meant to benefit Kenyans.
Our judiciary, we respect you, but judicial impunity by corrupt judicial officers must stop in Kenya.
President Ruto saying as much as 50% of NHIF funds were stolen by corrupt individuals wanted to halt changes to healthcare by use of the court system so that they could continue benefiting. President Ruto directed the executive to defy orders that disenfranchise the country's development agenda.
Priscilla, there to give you a bit of context, is alleging the judiciary is corrupt and is being bribed by a few Kenyans to stop his projects. Okay, when in Kenyan context, we are talking about the housing levy, it's like the government, for example, the government of the UK beginning to tax everybody a certain percentage in the name of the government to build cheaper housing for these particular citizens. Question is, did anyone say they want a house? And did anyone say they want a cheaper house? Maybe they have an expensive one. And then the other thing is, there's no consideration. You pick up your payslip, the government has taken some, either 3% off in the name of you building cheaper housing in the country. Is it the duty of citizens to build cheaper housing, or is it the duty of government? Should you be taxed for cheaper housing in any country? Should anyone be taxed for that? So this is the thing. The Supreme Court of Kenya ruled that this housing levy, this taxation, was unconstitutional. And it is suspended. The Supreme Court suspended that project and a few other projects which have been really implemented without any particular framework, you can put your finger on it. And when you grill and you ask the president, he begins to say, I'm the one in charge, right? But you can't see the framework that operates such. And people are paying money. Citizens are being taxed for that. So this is why he's so upset, because such projects have been stopped by the courts. Now he's accusing the courts, judiciary, of being bribed to stop those projects. The question is, of course, some Kenyans have come up in arms. They show us the evidence that any judge was bribed, you know. And have you forgotten? This is the same judiciary in very controversial circumstance who gave you victory, which was extremely disputed, sending the country into almost a month of riots. It's the same judiciary he was praising. Yeah? But now when they don't do what he wants, he calls them cartels who are being bribed. Well, I thought I'd give you that context. Now you can connect to your previous observation.
Yeah, I mean, it is quite shocking. I have to say, again, I'll need to go back to the, you know, when he assumed power. Young Kenyans appeared to be happy that we were now going to have a younger president, if you like. There seemed to have been some kind of a celebration. And Ruto came on. But then what I found interesting again was that soon after that, it was quite early, Kenyans were now seemingly angry, and they were suggesting all kinds of names for him. And one of the accusations was that he was a WEF puppet, and that he was, you know, not carrying out an agenda in the interest of the Kenyan people. So that was quite interesting to note quite early in his, you know, his assumption of power. And then, as you said, just a little over a year later, the judiciary that he once praised and said, you know, they were great, and on the back of what the judiciary did, he made such a rousing speech, which was, you know, applauded and welcomed by all. And, you know, some of us in the western parts of Africa felt like, ah, Kenya is running away and, you know, leading this quest for that, you know, missing leadership in Africa. And everybody was excited to see what was happening in Kenya. And then, you know, here we are, Ruto is now saying that the judiciary are corrupt, that the judiciary are... Well, what I find interesting is him saying, in his speech, he had said nobody should threaten Kenyans, nobody should threaten the people. But then when we look at his actions in this fight against the judiciary and some of his, some of the things that he has said, does he not sound as though he is now the one that is threatening the Kenyan people and threatening the judiciary? So what he was speaking against is now appears now to be his action, which is, you know, it gives me concern, because then it suggests to me, if so early in your leadership these are the issues and the tussles, and you're fighting with the judiciary who effectively gave you office, they can so easily help you out. And my concern is that he may not survive in this role for very long, because if his fight, you're fighting with the people, you're fighting with the judiciary, and like you said, the people are being taxed for affordable housing. Whilst we welcome the affordable housing, but how do you determine that those who are contributing this tax that they were not asked to contribute are going to need it? Do they still get allocated a home, even though they have a better one? Do these homes that, you know, you're going to allocate, if at all, is allocated, built first and foremost, and then allocated? How do you determine who gets it? Because really, if you're just going to do a blanket tax, and you say that these people that are being taxed are the ones that are going to benefit, then it doesn't make sense. because there are going to be a lot of people. Those people who are able to pay the taxes tend to be people who don't actually need affordable housing. Affordable housing is usually housing that is built for those who are very much at the bottom of the food chain within society, very much, you know, on low income, and their income are not able to compete in the same measure as, you know, the middle class income, for instance. And so they tend to live in the affordable housing parts of society. So when you then are taxing, it's not clear, as I can see, that we're going to tax, if you like, from the rich to the poor. This is not a Robin Hood situation here. What we're seeing here is we're just going to tax, and then we're going to build affordable housing. And nobody gets a say. Nobody gets to decide whether they want to participate or not. Nobody is asked if actually they think it's a good policy. And I suspect they're not being consulted about the land, because if we're just going to take your money to build, are we also just going to take your land to do that? It's a concern. So it's a bit problematic, and I appreciate that. Yes, he has the power as the current president of Kenya, but I think it looks more like the judiciary, as a third arm of government, are doing their part, which is to ensure checks and balances. And I think that's what they're doing. I do have to say, mind you, that his run with the judiciary just reminds me of the UK and the courts, especially in this their immigration issue.
They run the policy. Backwards and forwards.
You know, the court says this is illegal, and the UK says, oh, we're going to go into parliament now, and then we're going to look for a way to make sure that we override what you're saying. And this is exactly what Ruto is doing, which then goes right back to the concern that the Kenyan people had of saying, whose agenda are you running? This is not an agenda for the Kenyan people. So I think it's an issue that, I am pleased that the judiciary are doing their part, which is to ensure the checks and the balances, because that's what they're there for. And if, you know, they're performing their role. And I think that Mr. President needs to rethink. Whilst the policy of affordable housing is wonderful, the approach and the method needs to be reconsidered.
This is Colorful Radio.
You see, Priscilla, if you came to, of course, the housing levy is one of the most controversial of these Ruto's projects. But if you came to me, for example, I'm a citizen of Kenya, you come and say to me, I'm going to build for you an affordable housing. Number one, I would want to say, where are you going to build it? Can I see the land? Because you're going to get my money through taxation. You are taxing me for that. Show me where the land is to build it. Let me find out whether I would like to live in an area like that.
Exactly.
Let it be my choice. And number two, when you do that, no Kenyan, not even a single one, has been shown where that housing project will be built. And then we have an evolution of Ruto's regime demolishing people's homes in different parts of the country. And it's been alleged they're doing that to pave way for this project. So you demolish houses, people's homes.
To build.
So then you're going to keep a housing. And the houses you are building in some of the areas, they're the most affluent of them all. Millions worth of dollars in terms of the cost. And that's someone who took, for example, bank loan. He decided to invest. He legally bought a piece of land. Years later, this government says this land is illegitimate. It was not given the right way. And it's happening across the country. People are up in arms, screaming from all the parts of Kenya. Their homes being demolished.
Wow.
So the thing is worse than it looks. And this is one of the Ruto's controversial projects. Now, if you were to grill further, who is in charge of this project? You can't pin it on any particular ministry. You know, like you say, if anything was to...
What about internal affairs?
No, that's more to do with the security. So when you talk about, you know, for example, if you went to any country, if you come to the UK, talk about housing projects. When it comes to government, it's within the housing minister, the local government, But in Kenya, this is not the case. Because the political system is slightly different. We have county governments. Some of the counties are semi-autonomous. They control their budget, and the governor is the one in charge. So when it comes to the national government doing things, we want to find out who is doing this, who is the key driver of the project, which framework is it working? Are there numbers you can call and ask questions? I'm speaking to you right now. I don't know which number to call to find out about this project. If it was to be built, you want to say, I've been paying, tell me more, give me more info about this house I'm paying for.
But then
there's no number to call.
Are they not taking those homes that they're taking? Are they not doing it on some kind of compulsory purchase order?
No, they are demolishing. Priscilla, proper demolishing, tractors.
You can still buy it and demolish if you want. Are you demolishing without the notice to the individuals that own it?
No reasonable notice. Families have been found themselves in El Nino flooding. They had homes, but they end up having no homes.
Wow. Well, that doesn't... Kenya, as I said earlier, they've been leading for, if you like, good governance on the continent for some time. They've been leading in certain areas. They've certainly been teaching us a lot when it comes to elections on the continent. And so this is really disappointing to now to see what is going on here, because President Ruto has been that president that has given a lot of young Africans in recent times some degree of courage and encouragement, because when he stands before the UN, for instance, you know, he had spoken very gallantly about the fact that Africa must be allowed to develop, appears to be pushing for the sovereignty of Africa, the development of Africa and its people. And so then to see that after going out and doing all of that, that the people of Kenya are now, for instance, being subjected to this policy where they are being made homeless, when they were perfectly fine in homes that they probably built and owned, that's been taken away from them without any recompense. I am concerned about that situation. I'm concerned that it's been allowed to happen, and Parliament are not rising up in the interest of the people, because surely those areas must have MPs and they must also have those who are in charge that should be able to raise the issue and address it in Parliament, for the government to have a rethink, most especially compensate those whose homes have been taken.
It's been alleged,
justification,
Priscilla,
to those homes?
Yeah, it's been alleged, and it's a public secret, it's what we call public secret, because it's not a secret at all. Ruto's regime, Ruto compromised the electoral body. Ruto compromised, these again are allegations, compromised the Supreme Court, the judges. Ruto also is being alleged, he's compromised Parliament. So it's been, of course, allegations. MPs are bribed to vote in favor of the government, and some have taken the money and did the same. So when you talk about checks and balances, it's that compromise of the three arms of governance, executive, judiciary, and the legislature. So when you see him being upset, it's because the judiciary, they're Kenyans, remember this. Of course, one of the things that Kenyans had to contend was the increment of petrol prices and giving flimsy, silly excuses, let me call them that, You say Kenyans' petrol is high. The price has gone up because of the war in Gaza, right? Since when did our petrol get controlled by Hamas or Hezbollah? It's just so annoying. So
it's these situations, Julius, just begs the question, that one question of what is really going on? Because, you know, I can't help but observe what appears to be some kind of uniform policies around the world that are negatively impacting citizens, either making them poorer and making them homeless, affecting their livelihoods. It's everywhere. I mean, you and I are here in the UK, and of course we feel it, that our monies are no longer going the distance it once used to, because we're having to pay so much more, whether that's in petrol or just, you know, standard energy, not to mention food, you know, which is very critical. And I know that when I speak to Nigeria and people in Nigeria, they speak of the same. This whole fuel issue, this whole, you know, cost of food, there seems to be this attacks on farmlands. You know that, I think it was it not German truckers, the farmers that were out a couple of days ago, they were protesting. And they were protesting government policies that was affecting them to be able to farm as usual. We've seen it in the Netherlands. We've seen it even here in the UK. We've had farmers that have reported, some have reported, you know, all kinds of requests. And Americans are also speaking of it. It's something of a concern. Yes, we say the general government line is that, oh, the war in Ukraine, that was what we had last year that affected Nigeria and affected them. Okay. And then now we're saying it's the situation, we're going to say it's the Israeli-Palestinian war.
They're flimsy, excuses. They're just flimsy excuses. Let me share this. When you come to Africa, excuse me, you have no excuse. When you talk about oil, Nigeria is one of the world oil producing countries in the world, leading, not even one. So there's an issue there. Where would Nigeria, for example, have their own oil refineries? Where would you export crude and then begin to import your oil when it's refined? Mm. You see where the problem lies? Oh, Priscilla, how big is Africa? Tell me, if each country did proper agriculture, would you in a million years think of blaming the lack of grain from Ukraine not reaching Africa?
I mean, I think in response to this, I must mention, you know, what the Italian Prime Minister said. What is her name? You know, she, you know, now Italian is leading at the G7 countries, and on her leadership, her speech, her maiden speech, you know, she spoke about how the West needs to now deal with Africa. And, you know, she said, look, we need to stop being predators and we have to begin to be friends. We have to help Africa to develop if we want to stop having immigrants on boats and coming across. I mean, these are things that you and I have been saying for a long time. But then to hear the Italian, you know, Prime Minister put that out, that, look, we need to do this. She's speaking this to the G7 nations and saying, look, we need to do this. If we want to stop, we need to help Africa, because Africa has more arable land than we do. So we need to help them to develop that land and not give them charity, because they're richer than us. They're richer. It's a rich continent, and we shouldn't be saying we're going to give them arms and charity rather, but we should be helping them to develop. It was very interesting to listen to her choice of words that she was using, and I thought, wow, what a great awakening. A part of me was excited. And then the other part of me said, you know, where was she coming from? You know, yeah. I couldn't help but wonder, is it, I appreciate that the Western media will say that she's a right-wing politician. Yeah. And so we're not supposed to really, once we label her white right wing politician, we need to look yeah. at her differently, you know.
colorful radio.
Africa in Focus is sponsored by Dermadew Lotion. Visit dermashark.co.uk.
Yeah, amazing. Welcome back. The key question again. Do African leaders mean what they say? And what if they meant what they say? And they say nice things about Africa. Africa could be the best place on earth to wish to live. Not leave as you are going away, but leave because you are staying. So, I mean, we are trying today, we are exploring this idea, this narrative. Do they mean what they say? Yeah, they say nice things, but do they mean what they say? We've just at the back of hearing contradictions, you know, of Dr. William Ruto, Kenya's president there. And now we are going to listen to Ghanaian president, what he thinks about Africa.
We can no longer continue to make of the issue in the question. I think there is a fundamental misstatement of the issue in the question. We can no longer continue to make policy for ourselves, in our country, in our region, in our continent, on the basis of whatever support the Western world or France or the European Union can give us. It will not work. It has not worked and it will not work. Our responsibility is to charter a path which is about how we can develop our nations ourselves. It is not right for a country like Ghana, 60 years after independence, to still have its health and education budgets being financed on the basis of the generosity and charity of European taxpayers. By now, we should be able to finance our basic needs ourselves. And if we are going to look at the next 60 years as a period of transition, a period whereby we can stand on our own feet, our perspective has not to be what the French taxpayer decides to do with whatever surpluses that they have in France. They're welcome. They're appreciated. Whatever interventions that the French taxpayer through their governments make to us are appreciated. We're not going to lick a gift horse in the mouth. But this continent, with all that has happened, is still today the repository of at least 30% of the most important minerals of the world. It is a continent of vast arable and fertile land. It has the youngest population of any of the continents in the world. So it has the energy and the dynamism. We have seen it. These young men who are showing so much resilience and ingenuity in crossing the Sahara, finding ways to go across with rickety boats across the Mediterranean to really, those energies, we want to have those energies working inside our countries.
Priscilla, isn't that what we want?
6 years ago, it was the turn of the Ghanaian president, Nana Addo. President Nana Addo was his turn to, you know, talk tough for Africa, and, you know, was ready. Again, we were all applauding. This was fantastic. You know, he made those bold statements and took the bold step of saying, Ghana's cocoa, we're no longer going to allow you to just come in and take our cocoa raw materials and go off, and then, you know, we only get a fraction of the cost. And we were all thinking, wow, development is coming. But I mean, let's ask ourselves, 6 years on, what has Nanadu done for
in 2023 last year? just to top up what you are saying there, to give a bit more context as well. Mm-hmm. 2023 last year, the same under the leadership of Nana Addo Akufo, Ghana was given $3 billion loan by IMF. Yes. And now the debt is crippling the country.
Mm-hmm. I recall that debt, and I recall, you know, the outcry. Because at that point, it that debt looked as though it was actually about to bankrupt Ghana, or there were talks of Ghana, you know, about to be bankrupted. And it's what is so sad about the Ghanaian situation is that President Nana Addo Akufo is one that was said to be an experienced politician. And also, because of his legacy, the legacy of his father, and of course, you know, as are a lot of African leaders, highly educated and experienced in, you know, in governance and so on, you have there was a refreshing expectation that when he comes in, you know, he did all the talking, gave all the right impressions of how he was going to take Ghana from, you know, if you like, as Peter Obi would say, from consumption to construction, as it were. And yet, Ghana seems to have worse problems now than they did when he came in. The situation is no better. It was a lot of talking. It was a lot of hype. It was, if you like, hyperballs, but we didn't actually see the impact of that. Although Ghana, again, like Kenya, Ghana has consistently maintained a civilized electoral process, if you like, one that we can, you know, count on. And the judiciary in equal measure have also played their role, appeared to play their role in governance and holding the executive to account. But they don't appear to have done enough. And it's a shame that very soon Nana Addo Akufo's tenor will come to an end. And it would have been great to have been able to count the new institutions, the new framework, the new way of doing things for Ghana, most especially where the Ghanaian resources are concerned, because he was very, very adamant and clear on that. So we would have expected to be seeing. I must confess, I think they made more money, mind you, from cocoa last year, I think, than they've ever done before, which was positive. But is it enough? Because what we need now, it's to have an industry where we are not just exporting cocoa. No longer just exporting cocoa in its rawest form, but are we creating industries off of the back of that? This is the one thing that we don't do very well of in Africa, is our ability to create industries that generate real employment and that also generates an economy, a subsect economy that supports that industry, where there is those that are, providing things, those that are, because obviously there will be other products that are the offshoots of the cocoa. And so all of those areas are subsects that you know, generates the economy, generates employment, creates wealth, creates, you know, a surplus of fine money within the system. But we in Africa, we don't appear to run these industries through quite in the same way as we see it happen here in the United Kingdom, or in the West, for better, for want of a better expression. So it's disappointing. Very, very disappointing that he's not going to leave a better legacy. But it is rather, because I know that Ghana took a huge loan from China, for instance, something around the region of 50 million, billion or something. So what was that? What happened to that money? And then now we're back to getting money from the IMF. And money from the IMF is not the kind of money that you want to get, because it always comes with impossible conditions.
Yes, they restructure your governance. They even want to govern with you. Remember early 90s, the time we used to have the SAP, structural and adjustment programs.
Yes.
Crippling African economies, them telling you what political changes you need to make. Mm. And before they give you loans, they gave you with preconditions.
Colorful radio.
Yes.
And these are things that amazing, in a very surprising manner. You saw not long ago President Ruto going global, campaigning across the world, telling the world that we need a different infrastructure for international finance to replace IMF and the World Bank. But not long ago now, Kenya has some IMF and World Bank loan. Contradictions all around. So when we come to Ghana again, those wonderful speeches, yes, everything, yeah, you just said the right things there, but what stops these people from implementing the good they say, the good things coming out of their mouths? What stops them?
You know, that's a question that I think needs an investigation. It needs an investigation because when you sit with these leaders, as you and I are privileged to sometimes, and you have a conversation with them, you recognize their hearts, you recognize their... some will even go as far as to share with you their desire to see it better. But more than anything, you also note their humanity, and you note their intelligence, and you see all of that. And they come across very well, as meaning well for the people. And you know, as you said, they go out and they make huge promises. But then it begs the question, what happened? Why? What happened between yourself and the promises that you made? Why is it so? I know that governance, it's not easy. I know that you don't always get to have your way. But surely, when it's in the interest of the people and everybody will benefit, it should be more easier to implement, no?
Yeah.
Because that's what you're there to do. So I think that question really begs an investigation, and it's not one that we should ignore, because it begs an investigation, and then it also begs the question. It also requires that we look at Thomas Sankara, for instance, or we look at John Magufuli of recent, because these are two individuals that, if you like, stood up and said, we're not going to do according to your request and requirement. And they were, the Western world was very much against them and gave them labels. But yet, they were working assiduously for their countries. They were developing their countries without the need, if you like, for the so-called Western foreign direct investment that we speak of all the time. Magufuli came in there and quite literally readdressed a lot of the contracts that existed in Tanzania. And these were contracts, for instance, that did not benefit, that benefited the West more than it did the people of Tanzania. And he said, no, we can't have this. And, you know, if you were not prepared to rework the contract, he was quite happy to shut down completely and let you go. And, you know, on his departure, we saw the legacy that he left behind. We hear the same and read the same of Thomas Sankara of Burkina Faso, you know, the late Thomas Sankara. So there are those situations that exist on one hand, and then there are these situations that are current and in our faces right now. You know, that question of what is it that makes them not to carry out what they say? Because, like I've said already, they're not entirely bad people. It's not their original intent to be completely inept, if you like, in developing their nations. No. But then somehow they wind up in that way. So we really need to look at that.
And it's not that they are ignorant either. These are educated people. It's not even that they don't understand the international politics.
This is it. These are people that have worked within those corridors, holding various positions around the world. So then it doesn't make sense. What do they know that we don't know? What do we as Africans need to do more of? Because, you know, I've always held the belief that these issues are the way they are because Africans are not playing their role sufficiently in democracy. They're not participating, and so they don't really know what's going on, you know, in government, and they don't hold their leaders to account sufficiently. And as a result of that, those failings keep them, you know, it tends to be this situation of them against us, as in government against the people. But I think that given what we're seeing, the African people themselves, we as Africans, as citizens, need to be more involved. Perhaps if we're more involved, perhaps if we're more vocal, perhaps if we are standing together more, maybe that will have a different kind of impact on what we see, and it may prevent. Surely, holding people to account should prevent promises just going aloof. And
in Kenya right now, the slogans that was used by President Ruto, hustlers. Talking about the border, these are guys who use small motorbikes to transport people here and there. And also women, mama mboga, these women who sell their cabbages and fruits in the marketplace.
Yeah.
So that hustler brand he used to campaign, and it took him to power. These hustlers have taken him to court, demanding compensation for the promises that were promised but not made, which is a very interesting one. But you see, when you talk about the demography of Africa, and we find out that we have more youthful generation, the number of youths are more than older people. And you ask yourself, in the light of this dispensation, if, for example, this youthful generation was to be 100% or politically oriented and being involved and participating continually, do you think Africa can change? And do you think maybe people in power can be held into accountability? Do you think things can change? Kind of disheartening to see what's happening in Uganda with Bobi Wine, who is very young, and whenever he takes on Museveni, he's arrested and detained and beaten up, all these things.
We see it. We see it in Rwanda. We're seeing it in Ivory Coast. We're seeing it everywhere. But I think what we need to understand is that power, nobody's going to just give you power. You've got to fight for your place. And as African youth, we must get involved. We must get involved in our politics. And we must, you know, I know that our culture plays a huge role in the ability of the youth to be able to hold their leaders to account, because our culture is one that does not really permit for us to speak to people in authority directly. And so as a result of that, it means that a lot of people are concerned and they're fearful and they're worried. So, you know, when you stand in Chatham House and you ask the kind of question you did recently, or I stand in Chatham House and I ask the question to Tinubu and then, you know, or to Buhari, you have people then say, why would you ask such a question? Or people then say to me, oh, she doesn't like us. And I'm thinking, how can I not like you? Or what is there to dislike? Those were relevant issues that we need to, you know, it has to be addressed. It's not personal. But you can see that because of our culture, our mindset, our thinking, our reasoning tend to see these things as personal and not seeing them as being objective, not seeing the need for us as citizens to be able to ask these questions to our leaders, no matter how poor and bad, how porous or bad the situation is, which is actually very sad. So we're in an era right now. The onset of social media has brought on a lot of education. The onset of social media is helping the words to get around, if you like, to say that, look, you can ask questions. And to say that, to educate people to say, look, asking a question doesn't immediately mean I'm coming from a place of hate. These are issues that we need to address. If you say you're coming to be the president of the nation, you must be able to tell us why these issues that are hanging around you, what are they? Explain them. Clarify them. Break them up. We need to know. And we also need to know from you what you intend to do going forward about these other burdening issues that exist in our society. And I think that the onset of social media is encouraging the African youth to learn, encouraging the African youth to come forward, because now they're also addressing their parliamentarians online, which is great. And of course, the parliamentarians are reacting, still in that reactive mode of how dare you ask me such a question, and thus we have a Bobby Wine situation, and we, you know, the imprisonment and so on. Yes, we have a way to go, but we certainly cannot stop. It is something that needs to continue to happen, and it needs to continue to happen on a larger scale, because as long as if we are widening that gap, and as long as we continue increasing the noise, the conversations, the questions, we are closing in the gap of them and us. And then they begin to also understand that it's not just about them and their legions when you come into office. This is about the people, and you're there to serve. Because I think that, you know, the other problem is that Africans also make their leaders demigods. And because they make them demigods, these leaders come in.